It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name's Jet Lacy. I'm filling in for Ernest, J-E-T. And if you guys ever want to contact me, you can contact me at jet@freedomsphoenix.com. You know, I do get, once in a while, some emails, and I always reply. And I also, again, like to take phone calls at the Liberty News Radio call-in number at 866-986-6397, 866-986-NEWS. Getting back to what we were talking about with the climate hoax, and how it relates to eugenics. You know, you heard an interesting clip before from, you know, I was a YouTube from the Lyndon LaRouche Political Action Committee, you know, and it basically spells it out how they feel about us. How they feel that we are just subhuman animals. And I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I believe that we all have a higher mind. We have the capability to do fantastic things. And the people that are truly debilitated and truly, you know, say, you know, mentally incapacitated, they deserve our compassion. Not to be culled from the herd because they're not producers. If you really look at it, they only care about people that actually produce for them like you were part of their herd of cattle. You know, what happens when a cow gets old enough and they don't produce milk? They're either culled from the herd or created into beef now, aren't they? And that's exactly what we're talking about here. That they feel that we are their possessions, we are their cattle or chattel as a belonging, and that they don't care, they don't think that we have any soul, they don't think that we have any purpose or meaning other than to do work for them. And that's where they're desperately wrong. And I have numerous articles in front of me that totally paint a picture about how these people feel about us. And I still call them people, but my goodness, they're so nasty and they're so addicted to power. You know, when you get so much money in your life that, and you're born with it, you don't know any other way. And you're taught from the day that you're born that people below you, you know, people with less money, are worthless somehow, that they just get to believing this hype that they have created for themselves. And they have never had to worry about where their next meal comes from, or never worried about having to pay a bill, or never worried about going to the grocery store. They don't know how much a gallon of milk costs. They don't know what it takes to be a regular, everyday human being and worried about, you know, the type of things that regular human beings worry about. And I'm not saying it's not a beautiful life, because it is. And that's why we're here fighting. I'm saying that these guys just don't understand what it's like to be a regular human being. And so, after generations and generations of this, they just feel that we're so inferior to their aristocratic blue blood that we're not even worthy of existence. And man, are they wrong. And you know what? In the French Revolution, you know, they brought out the guillotine for about 300,000 of these people. And, you know, I'm not sure if it's time for that again. I'm not advocating for anything violent. That's not my style. I think that this is a lovolution, and I think that we can show them by standing up for ourselves, and that's all it would really take. All we need to do is take a stand. It's just like, you know, when people are sort of a type A personality and, you know, they have a personality that sets limits. They see push, 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 and see how far people will take it. And then once that person pushes back, you end up getting their respect. And as a society, we have done absolutely zero to prove that we are worth our salt at any degree, at any level. You know, Henry Kissinger said that, you know, soldiers are just dupes meant to go die for their ends, because they're, you know, the elites are financing both sides of every war since before World War I, and then they make money on the reconstruction. So everything that they do in this world, they're making money on, and we are the dupes that they're making the money off of. And now it's gotten to the point where they feel so superior to us that they feel that we're just nothing. We're animals to be dealt with, to be culled and to be treated. If you're not participating and producing for them, you know, they just want to get rid of you. And is that what you want to be? I don't. I'm not going to be. I'm a human being. I have a mind. I have I have intelligence. I have a creativity that regular farm animals just don't possess. And they're just not willing to see that in us. So, you know, there's all of these different articles that are coming out that are just basically painting the same picture. And you got to understand that they own the major media. They own everything that we hear from. You know what I mean? All the mainstream news. And I guess if you're listening to Liberty News Radio, maybe you got an idea about that. You're not getting all of your news from a source that is from the mainstream. But this article from the Financial Post in Canada comes out. This says, the real inconvenient truth. The whole world needs to adopt China's one-child policy. And I think it was funny, by when I was researching this article, the lady that wrote it, his name is Diane Francis, and she has two children. So what does she want them to do? Take one of hers away and murder them? I don't know. Is she feel that she's somehow better than us, that she's entitled to have two children, but the rest of us can only have one? You know, and her thing is, the inconvenient truth overhanging the UN's Copenhagen conference is not that the climate is warming or cooling, but that humans are overpopulating the world. So this is what they're changing. A planetary law such as China's one-child policy is the only way to reverse the disastrous global birth rate currently, which is 1 million births every 4 days. The world's other species, vegetation, resources, oceans, arable land, water supplies, and atmosphere are being destroyed and pushed out of existence as a result of humanity's soaring reproduction rate. Ironically, China, despite its dirty coal plants, is the world's leader in terms of fashioning policy to combat environmental degradation thanks to its one-child-only edict. The intelligence behind this is the following. If only one child per female was born as of now, the world's population would drop from its current 6.5 billion to 5.5 billion by 2050, according to a study done for Scientific Academy Vienna Institute of Demography. By 2075, there would be 3.43 billion humans on the planet. This would have immediate positive effects on the world's forests, other species, the oceans, atmospheric quality, and living standards. Doing nothing, by contrast, will result in an unsustainable population of 9 billion by 2050. Humans are the only rational animals, but have yet to prove it. Medical and other scientific advances have benefited by delivering lower infant mortality rates as well as longevity. Both are welcome, But humankind has not yet recalibrated its behavior to account for the fact the world can only accommodate so many people, especially if billions get indoor plumbing and cars. The fix is simple. It's dramatic. And yet the world leaders don't even have this on their agenda in Copenhagen. Instead, there will be photo ops, posturing, optics, blah, blah, blah about climate science and climate fraud, and announcements of giant wind farms, cap and trade subsidies. None will work unless a China one-child policy is imposed. Unfortunately, there are powerful opponents, like the rest of human beings. You know, this is just the stuff that's put out to make us believe that we're somehow less, that we're somehow not worthy of living on this earth. This is about the typical guilt that they just push on you over and over. When we get back on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock, my name is Jet Lacy. We'll jump right back into it.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock, and we're on the lunatic fringe in our fight against the New World Order. My name's Jet Lacy. I'm filling in for Ernest today to give his throat and vocal cords a rest, because after the Freedom Summit last weekend, they're kind of tired. And, you know, Ernest does, you know, he could talk the chicken off the bone, but man, what he has to say is always pretty powerful. So I don't mind listening, and I joke with Ernest a lot. I make fun of him. I tease him, but he's a really good guy. And, you know, even when he gives a speech, as much as I listen to Ernest speak, I am still always energized and inspired by his words. And it's a gift that he has that I don't know if I'll ever possess, but it would be wonderful. And he just does it with such aplomb and just laid back cool that it's pretty cool. You know, I really appreciate coming to do these shows, because Ernest sets things up that the freedom of the individual is always number one. And if you're asserting yourself in that way, Ernest is like, hey, do your thing, man. Go on. If you want to be free, I got your back. You want to be collectivist? Well, I think you're on your own. So I want to play this clip again. This is from the James Corbett report. And it goes into eugenics and the carbon problem that we're having. And it takes most of the segment. But I think it's important for you to hear. And then we'll talk about it when we get back. Well, yeah, we'll talk about it.
Today, just such a popular injustice exists. It has been infused into our culture and taken up as a cause. It is fervently believed in and advocated with great passion and force, and to speak out against it is to risk persecution and scorn, but speak out against it we must. The terrible injustice of our age has its roots in a most unlikely place, in the quaint villages and manicured gardens of the 19th century British gentry. Amongst that set lived one Francis Galton, a gentleman scientist who had investigated everything from meteorology to statistics. Shortly after his cousin, Charles Darwin, published his Origin of Species, Galton became fascinated with the idea that the survival of the fittest did not just take place between species, but within them. This idea became a pseudoscience, a study of the presumed racial characteristics of this group or that group, with an aim to explaining why the various peoples of the world occupy the positions that they do. In order to confirm their preconceived notions of their own self-worth, Galton and his friends started a new field of inquiry called eugenics. Unsurprisingly, it concluded that the rich and powerful were rich and powerful because they were genetically superior, and it offered a simple solution for improving the lot of humanity. Make sure that the affluent upper classes breed as much as possible, preferably within their own families, in order to preserve their superior stock. And make sure the lower classes breed as little as possible. This junk science, pandering as it did to the most rabid, the most racist, the most elitist interests of the moneyed class, became universally accepted in the Western world within a generation. Soon, country after country had implemented laws to allow the government to sterilize those citizens it deemed to be unfit. The true horrors of this strain of thought came to light when the German eugenicists, based at the Rockefeller-funded Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, gave the Nazi regime an ideological excuse to take the idea to its logical conclusion. Many of the Germans who went along with the Holocaust did so because they genuinely believed the scientists who were telling them that the Jews and Gypsies, the communists and homosexuals, were genetically inferior and needed to be eliminated from the gene pool. After World War II, when the full magnitude of the slaughter that had taken place in the name of eugenics began to become apparent, the eugenicist pseudoscientists scrambled to find a way to re-legitimize their racist and classist drivel. They wrote openly in the journals of their once-esteemed eugenics societies that they would now have to continue their studies and practices in a more covert fashion. Eugenics had to become crypto-eugenics. This was accomplished in a number of ways. The British Eugenics Society, for one, merely changed its name to the Galton Institute. The American Eugenics Society morphed into the Population Council, a group set up by John D. Rockefeller III, where members continued to advocate the very same policies for reducing the population of third world countries as they always had, only now they did so in the name of fighting overpopulation rather than fighting bad genes. Julian Huxley, brother of the famous writer, helped organize UNESCO in 1945. In the founding document of UNESCO, entitled UNESCO, Its Philosophy and Its Purpose, he argues that one of the key aims of the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization would be the re-legitimization of eugenics, so that the idea would once again become thinkable. He also went on to co-found the World Wildlife Fund with Nazi SS officer Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. Within a generation, science was once again ready to tell us why the only way to save humanity was to stop people from breeding. This time, the public was whipped into a furor not about Jews and Gypsies, but about carbon dioxide and environmental sustainability. The cover had changed, but the racist eugenicist text remained the same. In the logic of the eugenicists, the meaning of human life is itself transformed. Instead of something valuable, something precious, something to be desired and nurtured, fought for and celebrated, humanity is reimagined as a cancer, something inherently evil, the mere existence of which is a burden on the world. This, unsurprisingly, encapsulates the modern environmental movement's position almost perfectly. Human life is no longer something to be treasured, but something to be measured in carbon and then reduced. In the man-made global warming myth, humans are merely an obstacle to the proper functioning of nature. In the eugenicist fantasy, the Earth is saved when people die. In both ideologies, if they really are separate, the ultimate genocide becomes thinkable. Now, the leaders of the world are meeting in Copenhagen to decide on the future of your world, of my world, of the world of our children and grandchildren. They are proposing a reorganization of the world's economy. Punishing austerity is being urged in all corners. Groups of population control eugenicists are now arguing for carbon offsets to be used to stop the developing world from having children. The choir of madness is growing by the day, and everything seems set to reach an intolerable crescendo. And then, in the darkest hour, just as it seems the eugenicists are about to take over, along comes an insider, a hero, at the University of East Anglia, to leak the emails and documents with which the entire man-made global warming myth is exposed and the carbon reduction agenda is delegitimized. It is not always popular to stand against a great injustice, but it is always right. For the Corbett Report, I am James Corbett in Western Japan.
You know, it isn't always easy to stand against a great injustice, but it is always right. You know, and he talked a lot again about Aldous Huxley's family and Prince Bernhard, who founded the Bilderberg Group. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about what's going on with the Bilderberg Group. But here's just a couple little sassy quotes from Prince Philip, who is married to the Queen Elizabeth II. You know, he's on his China state visit in 1986, he told someone, "If you stay here much longer, you'll be all slitty-eyed." And he said to an Aborigine in Australia, "Do you still throw spears at one another?" This is just the type of people that we're dealing with that never had to...
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
I want to break free.
Hello, welcome to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name's...
Well, it isn't Jet Lacy, but you know, I just feel like getting a fancy voice when that music comes on the radio.
Hello, hello.
Well, we're talking about, you know, I get a little frivolous once in a while, but we're talking about stuff that is really important. And during the break, I was listening to a video by Alex Jones, it says the eugenicists are taking over. And he really puts it in a, well, he puts it in a pretty down-home way. That, you know, these guys are degenerate Nazi scumbags that want to move us out of the way so they can enjoy the fruits of the earth by themselves without all of us in the way. And that really is what it breaks down to in its, you know, crudest form, which I love Alex Jones. You know, I make a joke all the time. I used to listen to Alex Jones every single day. And then I started doing the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock show as the board operator during the morning show. And I quickly came to the conclusion that I can only handle so much hollering every day. And I make that as a joke, but honest to God, I don't listen to the Alex Jones show anymore. Because I really believe that Alex Jones is the New World Order 101. And after a while, you sort of get it, and he sort of hammers on it a little bit. And I tease Ernest about it, but Ernest has a little bit of a more higher functioning ideals of what libertarianism is and what the world is supposed to be and how you're supposed to just focus on the individual and their liberty, and nothing else ever works. Nothing else ever works in society. When you look at how, when our society, which is, you know, American society, is the point of reference that we all have, that the American society flourished and did well when we had the most liberty, when the individual was able to be as creative and kept as much of their own earnings and possessed as much of their own property as possible. And time over time, when those liberties slowly started to erode, America's not nearly as good as it once was. And I say, I don't have any doubts about it, that it is a direct result of the fact that our liberties are fleeting and that we pay more and more and more and more of our money to the government in order to do things with it, to enslave us, and to create further empire all around the world. The United States was never founded out of a desire to conquer the world. It was a bastion. It was one place on earth that cherished the individual and cherished the liberty of the individual. And Ernest bags on the Constitution a whole bunch, and I totally understand where he's coming from. But they did the best they could. is not a perfect document. They never said it was supposed to be a perfect document. There's no such thing. A document is nothing more than words on a piece of paper. And it's easy now, 230 years, to bag on the Constitution, but it was offered out of pure heart. It was offered out of, you know, honesty and trying to protect the individual. And, you know, the original Constitution was not, but it never got ratified until they put in the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And that is as good of a document as you're going to get. And that's why you hear Ernest talking about, he focuses on the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and the Bill of Rights. Because the Constitution really does, in effect, create a lever of power. And people that are anarchists like I am and like Ernest believe that, why do we need a lever of power at all? And that question is still interesting. I think it's largely because we're conditioned. And again, I say this over and over, that we became the most dominant species on the earth without having a government. We flourished, we thrived without having an overseer. We don't need that. We are going to do fine when left to our own devices. And we're going to do fine no matter what, as long as you don't try to quash the human spirit. Because when you try to quash the human spirit, not only do you quash creativity, which is the cornerstone of a free society, you create a resistance. And the people have to spend their time resisting when they could be flourishing and creating great masterpieces and doing all kinds of things. Perfect example. I was a nurse. I cared about people. I felt that I gave to society every single day. I felt like I was an advocate for the people that I took care of, to help them navigate through a system of which they were largely unfamiliar. But I got caught with marijuana, and therefore they took my whole career away. They took my ability to, in this society, you know, handle my own business. They took that away from me because I don't have a piece of paper that says that I'm qualified to be a nurse by the government. I am no less qualified today than I was then. That's 2 years ago. And, you know, I can take some comfort in the fact that I know that they haven't taken one thing from me, and that's the knowledge that I earned, and that's the knowledge that I gained. And no one gave that to me. I went out and earned it for myself. And yes, it's true that I'm not able to go out and earn a living as a registered nurse in the United States right now, but I'm going to use that knowledge that I've got someday again. And I can't say that I'm not bitter about it. I never hurt a soul in my life. And I've never done another person harm. You know, the marijuana I purchased with my own money that I earned. And that was that. So, you know, you be the judge. I mean, we're conditioned a lot to say that, oh, marijuana is bad. But I never hurt anybody. I never did anything to anyone else. I never ripped anybody off. I never stole from anybody. And that's a libertarian doctrine, that you just do not do force or fraud on another human being. And as long as you don't do force or fraud, then you're okay. And as long as someone doesn't do force or fraud on you, then you're okay. But we have a country right now that is based on deceit. We have a country that is based on evil. It's been taken over. It's been co-opted by the corporations. We are no longer of the people, for the people, by the people. We are of the corporations, for the corporations, by the corporations. And when this country first began, you had to in order to be a corporation, you really had to be to prove that you were a worthy corporation, you had to be a benefit to society. Otherwise, they didn't give you an incorporation. But then later on, They made corporations to be the same as a human being in the eyes of the law. And by doing that, it just created this horrible situation that we are involved with now. The corporations have the same rights as a human being. And that is where we, you know, and it's turned into it. They have co-opted everything where the corporations have more rights than a human being. You look at the Too Big to Fail. I was watching 5 seconds of the news the other day. You know, I was flipping through the channels and I was so disgusted that there was a New York plate that said Too Big to Fail. And it was a vice president of one of these huge banks. And they are reveling in our suffering. They are reveling and making money on our pain and suffering and loss. How many people do you know out there that don't have their, you know, or their pension funds or their retirement savings have dwindled down to next to nothing? They still paid into that their whole lives. The fact that they're worth less now is of no concern to anybody but the person that owns that piece of paper. They're, you know, the owner of that pension fund. The bank still got paid. So they are reveling. They don't care one bit about you. They want you gone off this earth. They want you poor. They want you destitute. What are you going to do about it? When are you going to wake up? When are you going to stand up for yourself? Because I'm standing up every day. I'm sick of standing up by myself. When we come back on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock, we're going to jump back into this thing, and we're going to be all right. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Open up your mind and let me step inside. Rest your weary head and let your heart decide. It's so easy.
It's so
when
easy.
You know the
rules. It's so easy when you play a Queen song over and over again.
I'm just making fun of Ernest. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name is Jet Lacy. I'm filling in for Ernest today. And, you know, I make jokes because I run the bumpers. I run the rejoinders on Ernest's morning show. And I play a little bit more edgy music, and I tease him about the Queen that he likes to play. But, you know, that's I like Queen a whole lot, and I like their words. But, you know, I got to tease the man. I got to tease the myth. I got to tease the legend that is Ernest Hancock. So on this last segment, I just wanted to say thank you. And I'm a little bit sad that I didn't get any calls on the call-in number. It's not too late, 866-986-6397, 866-986-NEWS. I want to talk about this article from Global Research. And I really like Global Research. They tend to be a little more leftist than I believe. But we have to understand that those of us on the liberty movement and those of us more towards the conservative end, we have a real set of allies in the very far left that's the intelligent left, the left that understands what's really going on. You know, and I always say that their assessment, their diagnosis of the problem is right on time. Their treatment modality of giving the government more power is what's wrong. But they understand that what is going on in this country right now isn't socialism as much as it's fascism. When you have the merger of corporation and state, that's fascism. That is Mussolini's definition of fascism. And on Global Research, a lady named Olga Chetervikova wrote an article called Catastrophic Global Warming, Ecological Brainwashing, and World Government. She writes, and this is just from December 10th, 2009, globalresearch.com, globalresearch.ca, I apologize. After an annual meeting of the Bilderberg Club in May 2009, remember, Prince Bernhard created the Bilderberg Group, and his daughter, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, still attends every single year, along with, you know, David Rockefeller. You have Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, all these people that we're always pointing our finger at. This is where the work gets done. They say they're just a think tank, but they meet in private with all this heavily armed guards. And if you look at, if you watch Ernest's show or listen to him, both the morning and the afternoon show, he had Kevin Trudeau on. If you go back to the archives, and Kevin Trudeau was there at Bilderberg, and he explains ad nauseum at length what their plans are for us. So I encourage you to go back to the archive on Liberty News Radio, because it is for free and you can download it and listen to it at your leisure. But I highly encourage you to listen to the Kevin Trudeau show, because it will open up a wide range of understanding of what is going on in this country and what these people have in mind for us, because he's rich. And he's part of their group. He's welcomed in on their yachts to sit outside the Bilderberg meetings, and he's invited to go inside. And but yet he's not one of them, and he's willing to talk about what happens and what their plans are for us. So I highly encourage you to go to the Liberty News Radio archives and look up that show. Getting back to what we were talking about with the catastrophic global warming, ecological brainwashing, and world government, Olga Chetverikova writes, after an annual meeting of the Bilderberg Group in May 2009, the establishment of the global management system of institutions seemed to have been given a boost, repeating the plots of American apocalyptic blockbusters. As soon as the financial top had opted for a lingering crisis... See, we got a lingering crisis going on. Global managers were instructed to work in two major ways. First, to invent a myth about the danger of swine flu pandemic in order to take control of the national health care systems and reorganize the World Health Organization into a global health care ministry, and oppose the threat of global warming to gain control of a world natural resources and introduce a unified green tax, along with the creation of a new subnational managing body, an international ministry of ecology. Both tasks aim to intimidate the population and thus substantiate any policies undertaken by international organizations. And this goes back to what I was saying about you have problem, reaction, solution. They are creating these artificial problems knowing that there's going to be a natural reaction by the people. And then they step in and offer the solution, which always in turn creates more problems. It's the Hegelian dialectic. It's all about creating a mass hysteria in order to bring about whatever they wanted to accomplish, which in this case is the New World Order, a one-world scientific dictatorship that is supranational, that is a global government. It doesn't matter about the individual sovereign nations that have to do with it. Look what they've just done with Europe. Europe is no longer, you know, individual countries ruled by individual nations. It's one government, the European Union. They just passed the Lisbon Treaty. So Europe is now effectively one country. And they have usurped the sovereignty of these individual nations. So we get both tasks that they said aim to intimidate the population and thus substantiate any policies undertaken by international organizations. Chairman of the Board of Governors of BP, British Petroleum, owned by the Queen of England, Peter Sutherland, once frankly admitted that he would like to impose fear of global warming in order to increase taxes and make people revise their lifestyle. Now we are witnessing another show called the UN Copenhagen Climate Change Conference, currently held in the Danish capital. It will run through December 18th, and aiming to work out a document to limit global emissions and replace the Kyoto Protocol, which expires in 2012. The EU, being one of the major organizers of the summit, had elected its first president, who was immediately described in the media as a creature of the Bilderberg Club. On November 15th, a few days before his appointment, Herman Van Rompuy met with the club's top managers at Val Duchesse Castle outside Brussels, where he spoke about the need to revise the mechanism of EU's financing and suggested a unified green tax which would go directly to Brussels. The fact that the issue was covered in the media proves that the members of the Bilderberg Club are no longer going to conceal that they are the real bosses in Europe. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier in the show, that when a parasite has to jump from one host to another, that is when they are their most vulnerable. And so we have this host, this New World Order, that's been sucking off of our jugular vein, you know, of America and of different countries, and they're trying to jump and create a host out of the whole world. And it's a perfect description. So such confidence annoyed some of the European Parliament members. Among them, an Italian, Mario Borghizio, said all three candidates for the role of EU president often attended meeting at the Bilderberg Group, and I think they should explain whether they are honest candidates representing their native country or just members of secret groups which had been organized to discuss pressing social and other kinds of issues. Another MP, an Englishman, Nigel Farage, criticized Rompuy's appointment and called him a, quote, puppet leader in the hands of Barroso. He even dared to say the EU is an authoritarian dictatorship ruled by bureaucracy, which is not elected by anybody. Commenting on the Lisbon Treaty, which created the European Union as a one nation, Farage told the delegates, it took you 8.5 years of intimidation, lying, and disrespect towards democratic referendums to lobby this deal. Herman Van Rompuy, the president of the EU, said that 2009 has become the first year in global management, he meant the G20, while the climate summit in Copenhagen is the next step in this direction. So, what goals are being pursued in Copenhagen? Lord Christopher Monckton, former advisor to Margaret Thatcher, I encourage you to look up his YouTubes, they're just fantastic. He lays it out straight. He said, when I read this treaty, I see that the authors are talking about the establishment of a one-world Marxist government. The second purpose is the transfer of wealth from the countries of the West to third-world countries in satisfaction of what is called coyly climate debt, because we've been burning CO2 and they haven't. We've been screwing up the climate and they haven't. And the third purpose of this new entity, this government, is enforcement, Monckton warned. And then he noted that the new treaty would be supported by most of the third world countries as they think they will receive money for it. And the U.S. president will sign it without expecting two-thirds of the Senate and Congress to ratify it. Well, this just breaks it down exactly what is going on. This is a one-world government. This is the New World Order that is going on right now in Copenhagen, Denmark. And if we don't stand up in opposition to this, that's exactly what's going to happen. We need to tell our elected officials, we need to tell everybody that we know about this, and we need to stand up for ourselves. And I do thank you for this opportunity to have a chance to speak with you on Liberty News Radio, and I've had a great time. For the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show, my name is Jet Lacey, and I hope to see you very soon. Bye.